Final Four is set, and it is an incredible field. Thanks so much for tuning back into the CBSSports.com College Basketball Podcast. I'm bringing on our national columnist, Greg Doyle, who was in St. Louis to watch Kansas get to another Final Four with Bill Self, and what a job that was. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the tournament as it's kind of played out since the start 2 weeks ago. I can't believe it's already been 2 weeks since Selection Sunday, and we'll look ahead to the Final Four. Greg, thanks so much for coming on, man. How you doing, and how is St. Louis?
Thank you, Matt. I'm good. St. Louis is fine. Omaha is the most magical basketball experience I've had in the last couple of years. It was just a great town. St. Louis is very nice, but it's no Omaha. Not St. Louis's fault. There can only be one Omaha. There can only be one champion. Omaha's it.
Okay, good deal. Well, we're going to get into your travels and what you've seen and what we've all seen and kind of, I don't know, grade or assess the tournament up to this point. But let's just go to the Final Four as we have it right now and address this because, you know, as we go up on a Monday morning, people are obviously looking forward to this. So for as long as you've been alive or as long as you've been covering college basketball, which obviously predates your national gig at CBSSports.com, have we had a field like this with so many storylines, so much interest, so much drama? To me, I mean, obviously Kentucky-Louisville is going to dominate it, but let's not forget about the fact that Ohio State and Kansas are obviously two very storied programs and have two Player of the Year worthy players. Is this the biggest one right now that you think we've had as long as you can remember?
Well, I know there's been one. I'm not good at remembering years. I know there was one where there was like three number ones that were just all blue bloods, and then a fourth team made it. Look, and you know, George Mason getting there was just nuts. Mm-hmm. Butler getting the title game 2 years ago, much less repeating last year, was nuts. They're always nuts in their own way. The one thing about this year's field that to me stands out the most is the nuttiness of some of these coaching matchups that we've seen. I mean, Roy against Kansas today, Patino against Donovan, and now Patino against Calipari. Are you kidding me? Patino and Calipari in the Final Four? That will shut down the state of Kentucky for about 72 hours preceding up to the game itself, and then afterwards. So I think that's where, to me, this tournament stands out is, holy cow, some of these matchups are incredible.
Is that, you know, to give kind of listeners a look into what we'll do with kind of our budget meetings of with our bosses here, is that what you think you might want to write on most this week? Because obviously what you have to say is going to be predominantly featured on the site here, being a national columnist. Is that what stands out most to you, or is just the Kentucky-Louisville overall storyline, is that something you want to target? Or is it maybe something that you wait till you land, you get to New Orleans, you get a feel, and then you'll kind of pick each day which angle that you want to take?
You know, I know that writing about Calipari and Patino or just Kentucky and Louisville would get the most eyeballs. I know that. I know Kansas has a huge number of fans. Ohio State does too. They don't have any less or more probably than Kentucky and Louisville. But, you know, you write about that kind of a collision, and you're going to get everybody reading about it. I mean, everybody's mm-hmm. going to read about that stuff. And so I realized that's what people will want to read, and normally that's what I want to write. Hey, if people are going to read it, then I'm going to write that. But you know, I don't know. The thing is that I do like John Calipari. I realize this makes me the minority, but I do like him. I don't really dislike Patino. I just don't really, you know, I don't know him. He and I have had a few conversations. In fact, he called me at home about 4 years ago and asked me, why don't you like me?
Huh.
So I've been hard on him, but then again, I'm hard on everybody. But anyway, given my own little kind of unique, we all have a unique little snowflake of a story, and given mine and the fact that I like Cal and the Patino and Louisville fans think I don't like him, I'm not sure I want to be writing about that just because who's going to believe me? You know, I mean, no matter what I say, you know, no one's going to believe a damn word I write about that because they're just going to say, you're just writing that because you like this guy or don't like that guy. So I don't know. I might find myself avoiding that just to avoid the look of having a dog in the hunt, which I really don't want to be that guy.
All right, you just dangled a big old carrot right there for our listeners. Are you able to maybe can I prod you just a little bit more on the background with Patino and what led to you getting a call from him?
You know, I don't know what led to it. Other than I'm sure I wrote some things he didn't like, and I'm sure I wrote some negative stuff. I'm not trying to act all innocent, like, oh, he called me out of the blue for no reason. No, I'm sure I gave him a reason. You know, I stick my fork in a lot of people here and there. I tweak him all the time. You know, and I don't really know what I did to Patino to get his attention. But I must have done it enough that he called. I've been called at home by a coach wanting to know why don't you like me exactly once in my life, and it was him. So there must have been something. You know, I'm not saying I didn't do anything, but I told him, well, if I don't like you, here's why, and I can't really talk about it on the air.
Yeah.
But I told him what I thought was going on, things that I didn't like. He defended it. I told him I don't believe it. I don't believe what you're saying to me. We'll have to agree, disagree on this. And, we kind of moved on from there. So
okay.
I haven't seen him since. I'm sure he remembers. You know, he might not remember that. Who knows?
You never know. Some of these coaches can remember every single little thing. all right, so you see Kansas take out North Carolina. You wrote a few things off that, but your primary column, Kansas is Butler, is kind of the tagline. All right, how'd you make that leap, Greg? Take us into why you believe that.
Because they're winning games because they know how to win. They're not winning games because they're just out-talenting you. Now, they do have talent. I mean, look, any team in the Elite Eight, certainly any team in the Final Four has talent. And they've got one monster pro. Thomas Robinson will be a monster. But other than having a couple of the guys that will, spend time on rosters, they don't have anybody else that's going to make an impact in the NBA. Jeff Withey is 40 pounds away from making an impact. He's more likely to be a 12-year pro in Yugoslavia, and I don't mean that as an insult. I mean, he's going to make a lot of money somewhere, but he's just, to be an NBA center, you can't be 7'2", 225. And if he's a fifth-year senior and he still weighs 225, I don't think he's ever going to get there. So anybody, Tyshawn Taylor, no possible way. Elijah Johnson actually is probably their second-best pro prospect on that team. But anyway, they're like Butler. You know, Butler last year had one top-10 pick, just like Thomas Robinson will be top-10. Gordon Hayward, top-10. Butler had another couple of guys, their shooting guard, Mac and Matt Howard, who had a shot at NBA roster, that kind of thing. But they weren't winning because they were bludgeoning you with talent. They won because they were older and knew how to win. This Kansas team, they're top seven. They are four juniors and three seniors. And of those seven guys, four of them have redshirted. So you're talking about an average age. I mean, that's like Kent State in 2002 or whenever Kent State –
yep.
Got to the Elite Eight. I mean, it doesn't happen at the major level. It happened at Kansas, and that's why they're winning. They're not winning because they're rolling out all these lottery picks and just killing you like Kansas teams have done in the past. But I think that's also why Kansas got this far. They've had some much more talented teams that have lost to Bucknell or Bradley or Northern Iowa, and Connor Tien, one of those redshirt juniors, told me in the locker room after the game tonight. And I didn't even ask him this leading question, but he told me, in the past, we've not respected opponents. We showed up and thought they'd just fold, whoever they were. And this year's team respects opponents and knows we've got to try our hardest to win games. And that's why they're Butler-like.
Okay. Is Bill Self's legacy, reputation immensely enhanced because this team makes a Final Four or because it's Kansas? Do most people kind of just assume that, hey, they should have gone there and this is just, another nice notch in the bedpost, so to speak?
Well, if people read my Butler story and believe me, those people will understand that this Kansas team has overachieved all year, and it has. I mean, Kansas, the idea of Kansas winning 31 games is not overachieving. But this Kansas roster, yeah, that's overachieving. Now, you could say shame on Bill Self for not having a better roster. I mean, you could, I guess, but he has coached great this year. And, the idea that he still has anything to prove as a coach, that kind of bugs me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not, you're not believing, you're not the only one who's brought that idea up. I've read that a lot, and I've heard that around today. In fact, our other guy here at the arena was Brett McMurphy, and he was going to write that this game, this Final Four, ought to once and for all get, Roy Williams' monkey off Bill Self's back. And the idea that it was there at all is baffling to me. He's got a national championship, several Final Fours. He wins the Big 12 every year. He averages 30 wins a year. I just don't know how much more the guy has to do to be considered a great, great coach. All this year's thing did is hopefully drive the point home with a hammer so deeply embedded that no one will ever ask that question again.
Okay, so Carolina loses. They don't have Kendall Marshall. It becomes kind of an interesting year for Carolina because if they have him, maybe they win. We don't really know. But, you blogged about afterward, they could be in a lot of trouble next year. And maybe they will. I mean, think about 2 years ago, Carolina doesn't even go to the NCAA tournament. Some people kind of forget that, I think. They went to the NIT, and they made it to the finals there and all that good stuff. But they kind of had a letdown year. Do you think it could be even worse? They went 20-17 in 2010, Greg. Do you think it could be even worse than that next year, depending on if they lose Barnes and Henson and Marshall and obviously Zeller's, he's out of there. What are you foreseeing, and kind of expound upon that that blog post you wrote about?
Well, those are four guys that are probably going to the pros. I mean, Zeller's obviously, like you said, a senior. Henson and Barnes put it off last year, and people that know college basketball a lot more than I do, because I ran this by those people, and they said, yeah, those two guys are gone. And Kendall Marshall is probably 50-50. And maybe, you know, look, if I'm advising Kendall Marshall, I'm telling him to go, because, and he's not going to listen to me, but this is a weak year for point guards. He's probably the top point guard in the draft. If not him, it's the guy from Weber State. That's his only competition.
Fuller, yeah.
And he just saw, you know, I'm one bad fall away from, you know, breaking a bone. And I think he's going to go get the money while he can. Especially when he sees everybody else turning pro. You might, like, why am I going to come back? My stock can't get much higher if all these big men are gone. And then James Michael McAdoo. Yeah, I mean,
who made himself some more. I mean, he was always considered a top 20 pick, but I think he made himself some even more money in March here.
Yeah, right. He's finally got, because of Henson's wrist injuries of his own, McAdoo finally got more minutes and forced his way in the lineup more, and today was very good. And you know, I've not seen enough of him to really understand why he's so highly regarded. I just haven't seen enough of it. I don't know. But Chad Ford of ESPN knows this sort of stuff, and he's got McAdoo as the ninth best player in the whole damn draft. So, it's a pretty good chance he'll go, too. I mean, we've seen Marvin Williams turn pro, didn't start.
He was a
Corey Maggette at Duke. Yeah, Corey Maggette at Duke turned pro. He didn't start at Duke. This guy could go, and he might be ticked off. You know, he might say, look, I am a top 10 draft pick, and Roy didn't play me this year. He tried to hold me back. You know he's going to hear that. Whether he believes it or not, I don't know. But you know McAdoo's going to hear that from agents and their hangers-on and whatnot, that, look, Roy held you back. You don't owe him anything. You go turn pro. And if that guy goes too, yeah, the next year the NIT might be a reach.
Yeah, I wonder how Roy handles all these guys, because obviously Calipari, he has an interesting dynamic the way he deals with players and when they're debating on going. And I think he really approaches them from a mental standpoint the right way. I don't know how Roy will do it or how he does do it. We'll see. One quick question, Greg, on UNC. You and I saw Stu Mandel tweeted this as well. You know, basically said Barnes, towel over his head, inconsolable, just kind of a loner there for a good 15 minutes in the locker room. You know, I was at the regional final loss to Kentucky last year in Jersey, and it was the same thing. I walked into the locker room, towel over his head. Eventually, some poor sap like just was like, you know what, I'm just going in for it. Like, I'm not waiting anymore. And he like dipped his recorder under the towel, and I was like, oh, that like made me cringe, but whatever. And then the media kind of went in. Can you just take me into the locker room a little bit? And was this genuine, like just complete defeat on behalf of Barnes? Because it was interesting to see that, like the exact same thing, 2 years in a row, his reaction. What was that locker room like?
Well, I wish I knew that was 2 years in a row, Matt, because that would have been a nice little tidbit for that tweet or something. Well, the locker room was a typical losing locker room. Everybody talking in hushed tones, and I've made out a few piles of players, and there was, you know, well, piles of media around players, and there was one guy in the back left. And there were so many media around him, and I know what Harrison Barnes looks like, but there were so many guys around him, I couldn't see him, and he's talking so quietly, I couldn't hear him. And so I asked a guy on the outside of the scrum, but a guy that was writing down stuff, so I knew he knows who this is. I said, is that Barnes? And the guy shook his head. He told me who it was. I forget what he said, but he like, with his head, he kind of nodded off to the distance and said, that's Barnes. And I look over, and that's why I didn't recognize him, because he's sitting there with a towel over his head, and his head on his hand, under the towel, actually, just sitting there, not moving. And I sat there and looked at him for about a minute and a half. And what was really uncomfortable is kind of like what you described last year with the guy at the microphone sticks up under the towel. Photographers are allowed in the locker room.
Right.
And I don't really like that, actually, or being allowed in the losing locker room. There's just, you know, there's no upside there. But anyway, there must have been two or three photographers sitting there 5 feet away from him, on their knee. Click, 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 click. So you're going to see Harrison Barnes with a towel over his head. We'll be all over the place tomorrow. And that strikes me as, it just doesn't seem a very classy thing to do. But anyway, that's what it looked like.
Okay. Yeah, it is interesting. That was the situation when I went in Florida's over the weekend. You kind of tread lightly. You know it's going to be pretty depressed in there. Although Michigan State's, by the way, was oddly like, they weren't okay with it. But it was almost refreshing to walk into a losing locker room and they were just like, listen, wasn't our day, we're out and it sucks, but that's just how it is. So, wow. But normally, you know, it's going to be pretty down and out. And sure enough, you know, It's almost just like these little tiny mini guns that are going off when these photographers, and I, you know, in a way I don't blame them because their bosses are like, we need those shots and you better go in there, you're fired. Like, so I get that. But anyway, going off on a tangent, the tournament itself leading up to this point, Greg, we haven't had a buzzer beater, but by the way, that, you know, while we do get them, we don't get them that often. The thing is, they're so great that we remember them and they stand out, but we've had plenty of tournaments. We had stretches. I wrote on this like 3 or 4 years ago when I had my own site. We had like a 5-year stretch where we didn't have a true buzzer beater, like do or die, ball in the air. If it falls, they win. If it misses, they lose. We didn't have one for a while. So we don't get that one, you know, up to this point as well. I think it's been a pretty decent tournament. Maybe it hasn't been an amazing one, but we've had the down part about it to me is we've had a number of games that have been really compelling in the first half, and then they've kind of subsided. Like Marquette Murray State, an amazing, amazing first half. Indiana Kentucky was pretty good throughout, but Kentucky kind of separated itself. Even, you know, Kansas Carolina felt like a game like it should have been coming down to the final two or three possessions, but Kansas separated itself. Just what are your overall impressions on this year's field, how it's played out, and have you been fulfilled and satisfied to this point, or do you think it's a little bit of a letdown?
Well, I've enjoyed it a lot. I saw a tweet yesterday from somebody that said this March Madness is kind of like is the basketball equivalent of Alabama 9, LSU 6, or vice versa, what that score was. And I saw that and thought, I don't see it that way. I don't see these games as being boring. And Self was asked yesterday about his team and its offense. He said, well, in the regular season, my theory was first team to 70 is going to win. And he says now here in the tournament, with the way Kansas is playing, first team to 60 is going to win. And it's been that way across the board. You've had a lot of low-scoring games for the most part. Kentucky's been the exception. But I've enjoyed them. You know, a low-scoring game in football is unwatchable to me. But low-scoring in basketball, now 48 to 47 is unwatchable. But if you're in the 60s, you're not like, you know, that's not soccer. There's enough scoring there to keep you interested. And so I've enjoyed it. I think these have been really good games. And no, you're right, there's been nothing down the last few seconds. But NC State had a shot at the buzzer. Actually, Kansas' last two games before today.
Right.
The other team had a shot at the buzzer to tie it. Now, neither shot was all that realistic, but they still had a three-pointer at the buzzer to force overtime, and neither Purdue or Kansas or NC State could get it done.
And you've been star-kissed, right, with the regions you've got? I mean, you had mentioned Omaha and how you loved it. What was your first weekend like there?
Well, I'm a Midwest guy. I like the Midwest. It agrees with me. So I'm going to like places like Omaha and St. Louis, too. I mean, St. Louis is great. It's just, you know, Omaha was another world. I had no idea. I mean, it's a big town. It's, I don't know, 400,000 or 500,000 people, and apparently the metro area is about 1 million, I guess. But it doesn't come across that way, which to me is perfect. It's a small, big town or a big, small town or something like that. And that's awesome. That's what I want to see. You know, the downtown's charming, and I rarely go to towns and think, yeah, I could live there. But I could live in Omaha for sure. Loved it. St. Louis, I don't think I'd want to live here, but it'd be on my list. If I had lived in Cincinnati, it'd probably be on the list of 10 I'd look at. So, yeah, anyway, Midwest, that's where I need to be.
That's just your place. But you also got, I mean, you got some good luck with your first weekend. Now, like Goodman bounced back and forth between Louisville and Columbus. He didn't get one good game. He took a gamble, and he actually, you know, he had all these games and he missed out, but you got some, Purdue should have beaten Kansas, man. And then you get Norfolk State, which who knows what happens with, you know, Kentucky and Louisville, but I think 10 years from now, if like Kentucky casually beats Louisville and then Kentucky wins, you know, both games by like 12 to 15 points, I wonder if like the day that both 15s won ends up being the enduring memory of this tournament. Do you think that might be the case?
It could be. That happened so early that I don't know if that's going to be the case, but it's possible. Kind of like Duke won the title 2 years ago, and with the exception of Duke fans, I really think that'll be the tournament we remember that for Butler.
Yes.
And just like the 06 tournament we remember for George Mason. Whatever we're going to remember this one for, it hasn't been established yet, but the candidates certainly include the day Lehigh and Norfolk State both knocked off a 2 seed, yes.
Okay, let's circle back around to the Final Four in general. Give the people a little more here to digest as we kind of look ahead. So what I really like, and it was is a pretty decent storyline. We were robbed in December of Sullinger versus Thomas Robinson because Sullinger was out with an injury, And to me, I think that's going to be fantastic just to get those two guys going against each other. And I think Sullinger, he's had an inconsistent year, Greg, but the fact that, you know, he came back to school, gets to a Final Four, clearly what he did, you know, it's almost like the fact that he didn't have this great year, and Goodman kind of touched on this in his column because he was there in Boston when OSU beat Syracuse. It doesn't really matter. Like, the team's gotten to the Final Four, and I think I like Ohio State's chances against Syracuse because of how good a defensive team they are. But as someone who's seen Kansas up close for 2 weeks now, I mean, are you swayed by what this team has done, or does it go back to what you were saying before and how they're Butler, they know how to win? But, you know, then again, if we're going to go that route, Butler did not win a title these past 2 years despite its real strong March showings leading up to the Final Four.
Yeah, I don't see Kansas winning the title. I don't. I think ultimately the most talented team or the hottest talented team will win. And Kansas, Tyshawn Taylor scored well today. He scored 21 points maybe, but they were mostly point-blank shots and free throws. I mean, he still hadn't hit a three-pointer in a dome yet, and he'll be in a dome next week too. I can see Kansas getting the final, though. I can see them beating Ohio State. But Ohio State's one of those teams like Kentucky, North Carolina. In fact, those were the three teams, based on some guys didn't turn pro and otherwise they had monster recruits coming in. Those were the three teams that on paper were kind of head and shoulders above everybody else entering the season. Mm-hmm. That's what I thought anyway. I remember telling anybody who would listen in the preseason, Kentucky, North Carolina, and Ohio State. That's your top three. And two of them are here in the Final Four, and that's going to be cool to watch. And yeah, Sullinger's got some money to make for himself. You know, his draft stock might be, you know, teetering somewhere.
Right.
I mean, it's not – he'll go early, but it might not be quite what it was. But if he puts on a display against Thomas Robinson and then Anthony Davis as well in the final, then, you know, he rockets back up to the top. So that'll be fun to watch those big men. I guess that's the best thing about the Final Four that I can see is just some star power big men we're going to see.
Okay, last thing here. Put me in my place if you think I'm wrong. Before Kentucky won, and I was kind of writing a column off Louisville getting to the Final Four. And, you know, I had basically come to the conclusion that Kentucky, if they were to beat Baylor, to me this would be one of the biggest storylines to hit the Final Four. Like, I know that Mason and Butler and VCU, they were all huge. Don't get me wrong, they were massive, and they had plenty of carryover effect and plenty of build. But, Greg, to me, this seems like it's the storyline that will keep the Final Four, in the A segment of every talk radio program, national one, from now until Friday, barring, you know, Peyton Manning having an abrupt retirement, or if Tim Tebow, you know, goes out and stabs Mark Sanchez Tuesday afternoon. Anything like outside of that? Like, I know Tebow's got a press conference on Monday, and ESPN's going to do what it's got to do with that, but to me, this feels like one of the bigger ones that I can ever remember. But from your perspective, obviously, going back to you've covered so many of these things, am I overstating that a little bit, or is the power of this rivalry and the fact that Kentucky is just downright vibrating right now, and maybe it's enough to kind of hum the country, so to speak? Do you think that this really has a lot of power and is one of the more mainstream Final Four stories we've seen in the past 15 years or so?
Yeah, I would say the only one that jumps out to me is as big, and I can't say bigger, but the only one that jumps out to me as similarly big was, I guess it was 2004, when Kansas played North Carolina. That was just a couple years after Roy had left Kansas for North Carolina, and they met in the Final Four. And that was just enormous. I mean, that was just crazy it would happen that soon. Just like this is crazy that Patino and Calipari and Louisville and Kentucky are going to play in the Final Four. You know, you're right about the Mason, the VCU, the Butler. Those are huge stories, but they were huge stories because they were one team getting there, and that's huge. This is a huge story because both teams, you know, the fan bases of both teams don't like each other, and it's news. It's, you know, two is bigger than one. So any game that we're talking about nonstop because there's two teams involved that are fascinating and the way they interact with each other, that trumps, you know, one George Mason here and there.
Hey, man, it was great to get you on the pod like this. You're a busy guy. You're kind of hitting up on all sorts of stuff. You're like – you what? You're in the gym doing MMA boxing stuff like five times a week. So this was, I really appreciate you coming on, man. This was great.
Well, thank you. I know my voice is trailing because I'm.
No, hey, dude, I'm on like 4 hours. I took the red eye from the West Coast, so so I'm on like 4 hours of sleep in like 3 days or whatever. So I'm just kind of like grinding it out. When are you getting to New Orleans? When are we gonna rendezvous as a staff? Are you in Wednesday or Thursday?
Neither. I get there Friday.
Rockstar. Yeah.
Yeah, well, March Madness is just it's such a long grind, and there's 3 weeks in a row, and it's not like we're breaking open rocks, so I'm not going for sympathy here, but basically I've got a wife and two kids, and I'm gone from them so much that the idea of flying New Orleans or any city the day before press conferences, and then just so I can wake up and have press conferences the next day, no, I'll just wake my ass up early Friday morning and fly up early. And get the press conferences in time that way. It's not the most relaxing way to do it, but you know, it's just after 3 weeks of being gone from my kids, it's just that they don't really appreciate me leaving any earlier than I have to.
All right. Well, do you have a recommendation for where I should go Thursday to get some lunch, or is New Orleans a town that you haven't spent too much time in? I'm sure you have, right? I mean, you had to.
I honeymooned in New Orleans a long time ago.
Really?
It is not my kind of town. I don't
get
know.
Get out of here. Wait.
I don't like New
Orleans. Say. Everyone has been like, New Orleans is the most amazing city, so unique, and you're down. You're down on it.
Well, I'm not normal. Look, after the game tonight, all the writers, friends of mine are going out drinking, and they're asking me, do you want to go? No, I don't want to go. That's just not what I do. I like to go back to my room and sit here. I'm
going to talk to Orlander, guys. I'm sorry. I got more important things to do, so I appreciate it.
Well, actually, you didn't even weigh into it.
I know.
But that's how weird I am, though, is that I don't like having fun. I don't want to go to New Orleans and have fun. I don't want to go to New York and have fun. I just want to – I don't know what I want to do, but what I don't want to do is buy $8 beers just so I can do something that I've been doing my whole life. No, I can drink when I get home.
Well, listen, I had fun here. Even if you didn't, even if this was torture, listen, I really...
It was not. It was quite an enjoyable time.
I really do appreciate this, man. All right, we'll let you go. You can follow him on Twitter, at Greg Doyle, CBS. That is Greg with 3 G's. And, hey, I'll see you in just a few days. All right, man?
All right, Matt. Good talking to you.
All right, we'll have Goodman and Parrish on the Wednesday show. You can look forward to that, and we'll talk to you soon.